I want to pack in a lot today, just because in the next order of mitzvahs, there's five that came up. They're all somewhat related, so I'm trying to group them all together. So let's I'll read through the five that we're going to discuss quickly, and then we'll discuss them more in depth, more slowly. So we're up to mitzvah number 504, going through 508. And all these mitzvahs have to do with our treatment of Kohanim and Levim. And that's really the theme of all these mitzvahs. So number one, mitzvah number 504, is that the tribe of Levi does not get any land in Israel. When they distributed out all the land to the tribes, Levi got no land. The Levites, they got cities to live in. But beyond that, they got no farmland, no inheritance in the land of Israel. That's number one. Let's remember number 504. Number 505 is that the tribe of Levi gets no part in the spoils of war. When the Jews set out to fight wars to conquer the land of Israel, and there was a lot of spoils of war, all the tribes got to split those spoils besides Levi. They got no spoils of war.
Is that just for the wars of the conquest of the land, or all wars?
I think it's all the wars. 506 is there's a concept in general of matnos kahuna, gifts given to Kohanim. There's actually 24 matnos kahuna, 24 different gifts that Kohanim receive. We're not going to discuss all of them today, but this parsha we're discussing, these mitzvos have there's three different gifts the Kohanim mentioned here. The first one mentioned, which is mitzvah number 506, is that the Kohanim gets from every single animal we slaughter, Zeruah L'chayim V'keva, which is translated as the foreleg, the jaw, and the keva is part of the stomach called the maw, M-A-W, if you know your animal stomachs. But so they get the foreleg, the jaw, and the maw. So Zeruah L'chayim V'keva. So we'll discuss more if that applies nowadays, etc. But whenever you slaughter an animal to eat, you would give the Kohen these parts. Number 507 is the concept of giving truma to Kohen. When it comes to vegetables and fruits, which is really rabbinic, but the Torah requires grains, olives, and grapes, you must give to the Kohen a portion. The rabbis extended that to really all agricultural products, and that's called truma. The custom was to give 2%, but technically, according to Torah law, any amount suffices. But the custom was to give 2% typically. That's even one grain. Yes, thank you. That would be enough. And then number 508, the fifth mitzvah of the day, is called Reishis Hagez, the first of your shearings. When you were to shear a sheep, the Kohen would get a portion of the shearings. So that's the fifth mitzvah to discuss. So all these mitzvahs have to do with treatment of Levim and Kohanim. And it really points really to one major theme, which we'll get to. But that's these mitzvahs. So let's explain a little bit what this is all talking about. So I want to discuss just a general approach to how we view the tribe of Levi. And remember, Kohanim are just one section of Levi. Levi was the father, and then some of his children became what we call Levim, and then Aaron's children became Kohanim. But it's all from the same tribe. So really, it's a very similar approach to the entire tribe. So let's talk first about this idea they get no land and no spoils. So it sounds like in some way a punishment. Everyone else is getting to bring back all this wealth from war. Everyone else gets this beautiful, large portion of Eretz Yisrael for agriculture and for building, and the Levites get nothing. How does that work? So many commentaries describe the point of these mitzvos, but many of them focus on the same general topic. I'll read to you first from the Rambam. I'll tell you what the Rambam says, and we'll move from there. The Rambam points out that the tribe of Levi is supposed to be distinguished as our spiritual leaders, our spiritual guides. They were a tribe that, first and foremost, they're dedicated to serving the Beis HaMikdash. They're the ones who are in charge of the Beis HaMikdash, did all the service there. But when they weren't working the Beis HaMikdash, their job was to learn Torah and teach Torah. It says the bracha given by Moshe to the tribe of Levi, it says, Yoro Mishpatecha Yaakov Asarascha Yisrael. The tribe of Levi should teach your laws to Yaakov, to the children of Yaakov, and your Torah to the children of Israel. So their role was not just to do service in the Beis HaMikdash, their role was to be Torah teachers, Torah scholars, and Torah guides for the entire nation. It says, Sifsei Kon Yishmeru Das, the lips of a Kohen will protect the religion. You should request Torah from his mouth. The Kohen is one who guards our faith, and you request from his mouth Torah. So again, the idea is that the Kohen's job is to teach Torah to Klal Yisrael, to the Jewish people. So part of this idea, in order for them to have their role as our Torah guides and Torah teachers, they can't be too involved in the nitty-gritty of day-to-day physical life. They don't fight the wars. They don't farm. Basically, they're given housing, and they're told, become spiritual lights to the nation. And we're not going to bother you with other types of mundane tasks. You know, use your free time and use the support you're given by the Jewish people in order to grow as Torah scholars and as spiritual people and teach others. Their focus is on, if your focus is on the physical, you can't grow in the same way spiritually because you're so involved in every single day and doing daily tasks. It's very hard to grow to those spiritual levels that the Levites are able to grow towards. So they were exempt from wars, exempt from regular agriculture, and they were supported by the nation. It allows them to grow as people. I would say, just as an aside, for us, obviously we're all involved in everyday mundane life, but the concept of having Shabbos, let's say, Shabbos is the day we all get to draw back from the mundane and from the physical, and Shabbos is the day where we should feel extra spiritual growth, because we're living one day where all of us on those days are like the Levites. Now, on that day of Shabbos, everybody withdraws, and everybody's supposed to be focused much more on the spiritual than the physical, and you're given a chance to grow. So the Levium, they had a Shabbos type of attitude all year long because they didn't have to be involved in them. They were allowed to. I mean, there's no prohibition. A Levi's allowed to farm. But his life was set up in a way that wasn't conducive to his living because he wasn't given land and he was supported by the nation. He had food to eat. So he was told, your job is to be a Torah scholar. Forget about the farming. So for us...
And also carry over from Mitzrayim.
Say again? Yes, that's from before. Yes, correct. Even in Mitzrayim, they weren't enslaved. They spent their time in Mitzrayim also. They were the ones who were the scholars. They were learning. They were teaching. This was their role through all of history. For us, we're supposed to also see them as different. I mean, it's not just for them. On the one hand, they don't fight wars and they don't get land because they need to become different. But also, as Jews, our job is to see them as different types of people. We have to respect them and revere them as spiritual people. And therefore... No, we are sure that we treat them differently. Now, we're not going to expect them to farm. We're not going to expect them to fight because we have to view them as they're on a different plane than us. That's how we view the Levites and the Kohanim, at least in the days of old. Furthermore, just very practically, when you have land, then your time is very occupied. Let's say they're very, very spiritual people, but it's very simply, number one, it takes a lot of time to be a farmer. Now, going to work takes up a good part of our day. The need to care for a farm... it's a very time-consuming process. Just think about it. A lot of people will retire to a condo and sell their house. Why? Because caring for a house takes a lot of work. You have the lawn, you have this and that. So you go to a condo, it's a little easier to care for, an apartment. So the Levim didn't have to have that time burden upon themselves, and they're available to serve Hashem in every moment. So when they're called to go to the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't have to say, I have to close my business down. I have to, my farm is, I can't leave. No, they're available to go. And in general, they had time in order to teach and to learn. That's what their lives were centered around. So they're available at all times, and more importantly, they're available for the Jewish people whenever they're needed to teach and to learn and to guide us. So accordingly, if we're not giving them land, not giving them spoils, we have to support them. It's not fair for us to say, okay, no land, no spoils, be very spiritual, but good luck eating. That wouldn't be a very fair setup for the Levium. So Hashem, the Torah, builds in that we give gifts to the Levium and the Kohanim. The Levium received Maaser, tenth of all produce, and the Kohanim received 24 separate gifts, which we spoke about a few of them today. But they received Truma, they received the pieces of the animals that you slaughtered, and they received the beginnings of your shearings, the Rishis HaGez, the wool. But they received all these different types of gifts, because if they're not going to have their own jobs, their own farm, they have to be supported. Now, this frees them all their worldly concerns, so they can then focus on their duties as the servants of Hashem, the Beis HaMikdash, and our spiritual guides. So this really is the underlying reason for all the gifts to Kohanim. So again, we were mentioning three today, there's another 21, which maybe we'll get to at some point. We got to some of them before, maybe. But all of them have the same underlying reason, which is we want to make sure they are supported so that they can perform their role as the spiritual guides of the Jewish people. And for us, I think it's a very important perspective. Because it's not just, it's not just for them, it's for us. We need them. When Hashem says, you must support the Kohanim and Levim, it's not because, they're living the life, they get to relax and be supported by the nation. It's supposed to bring us the recognition that we actually need them. If we don't have our Torah teachers, our Torah scholars, and our spiritual guides, then where does that leave us? We need people of that caliber to be able to teach us and to guide us. And if we don't have them, then we're in trouble. So without this core of people who are just totally, totally involved in spirituality day in and day out, we lose out. We don't have our inspiration. So we should feel indebted to them. Now we are indebted to the Kohanim Levim because we need them in order to, for us to survive spiritually. So when we give gifts to the Kohanim, it's not just about supporting them, it's about the recognition for ourselves that we need them in some ways more than they need us. We need those people. I'm just as an aside, to put it more into modern terms for a second. I mean, nowadays we don't have the setup. You know, we don't have. I mean, we have Kohanim Levim, but no, we don't have the gifts we give to them. Even in Israel, they don't give those gifts anymore for various reasons. They're not involved all day long in serving God. No, their regular jobs, just like anyone else. That's nowadays how Kohanim Levim have developed based on the current situation that we're in exile and destruction. But our perspective, I think, can be taken in the same way towards our Torah institutions, whether it be towards a shul, towards the yeshiva, towards a kollel, towards those rabbanim out there that do guide us and teach us and inspire us. And that should be the attitude. It's that, number one, you know, yes, they may need some support. You know, yeshivas need donations, and so do shuls. On the other hand, you know, we need them like just like they need us. If we don't have the institutions in our communities and in amongst the Jewish people, then we're doomed. Because without those institutions, then where does that leave us? You know, historically, it's described that a lot of the deterioration of the Jewish community spiritually in the early 1900s was due to the fact they had no institutions. There were not schools, there were not yeshivas, there were some shuls, and that was the extent, really, more or less, of Jewish institutions in America. So that didn't allow for Jews to thrive spiritually. As time moved on and people became aware of the need, or were convinced of the need, that they have to have institutions in the community to spread Torah and to teach, and that changed the face of American Jewry. And nowadays we have a growing and thriving community really based on that historical change, I believe. That's what many have said. That makes a lot of sense to me as well. It's our attitude. It should motivate us that just like we had to support the Kohanim Levim as the servants of Hashem and those who guided the Jews spiritually, we have the obligation to support our own communal institutions, which guide us. I'm not here to make any appeals, don't worry. But that's not my goal right now. But in general, I think the attitude can be translated from Kohanim Levim to communal institutions, which do provide Torah to the people. Let's move on for a second to look at this mitzvah. It says they don't get any spoils in war. So the Jews go out to fight battles, and everyone gets to split up the spoils, but the Levim and Kohanim do not. So there's a very interesting point made by the Sefer HaChinuch here, a little bit different point. So we mentioned before, well, they don't get spoils of war because they're not involved in fighting, and they're distinguished, so they're not involved in war. The Sefer HaChinuch says a very important point, it's a very deep point. He says that even though spoils of war are totally permitted to use, halacha allows one to take spoils of war. That's allowed. But he says it's not befitting of the people of the tribe of Levi, the servants of God, to benefit from these spoils. Because ultimately, spoils of war are taking from others, people that are distressed and distraught by the situation. They were just attacked by an enemy army. Their cities have been destroyed. They probably lost family. And yes, we are taking their property, and we're allowed to use it, and the Torah permits it. But when you're on the level of the tribe of Levi, how can you personally benefit from items that others are distressed about? That's what he says, that the tribe of Levi should only take items which are obtained through, he says, yosher, through being honest, and through acts of peace, and acts of trust and faith. But items that are gained through battle, through war, even if technically they're permitted to use, it's not befitting of the tribe of Levi to use these things. That's what Sefer HaChinuch writes. And it's a lesson for us, a very important lesson for us, meaning that some things might be permitted, but they're tainted. Deep down, there's something wrong with these items. And there's a lot of things that can come from this. Number one, when you use a tainted item, let's call it, even though it's totally permitted to use, you take possession of others lightly. Now, I was allowed to take this, but the owner is back there distraught and crying over it. So at a certain point, I'm going to say, well, possession obviously is not all that important because, you know, he feels he possesses it and I'm still using it. Spiritually, there's a spiritual idea that even objects, they might lead you to blessing only if these are, let's call them, peaceful objects in a certain sense. There's a concept that bracha only rests upon things which are obtained in certain ways. And even if you can say these are permissible to use, it doesn't mean that it's going to be blessed by Hashem as you use it. But I think the main reason for this is a sensitivity. I mean, Sefer HaChinuch says that they only could use things that are obtained through peace and through honesty. There's a sensitivity that we have to have towards other people. And I want to tell you a story which I think really, really describes this. I heard this story recently. Rav Pam Zatzal, who was a Rosh Shiva in Torah Vadas, known to be a very, very big tzaddik, very, very careful with others, very sensitive to others' feelings. The story goes that one time his children found some money in the street. And they brought it home, they were very excited. And technically, according to Halacha, you're allowed to use that money. I mean, dollar bills, there's no special indicating sign on them who the owner is. So if I find a $20 bill in the street, the Torah allows me to keep that $20 bill. If there's some special, wallet it's in, I have to return it because the wallet identifies the owner. But if it's just a $20 bill, I'm allowed to keep it. Mm-hmm. So they bring home the money to their father, to Rav Pam, and they tell him, we're so excited, we found this money. They're trying to figure out what are we going to buy, what toy are we going to buy with it. The kids are all excited about it. So Rav Pam told them, he said, you'll use the money, but we're going to put it over here on the table for a few days first, and then we'll use it in a few days. So the kids said, why can't we use it right now? Halacha says it's okay to use, why not? He says, because there's somebody out there that's feeling distraught over the loss of money. And how can we personally benefit from this money when someone else is crying about it? Okay, next week they'll forget about it, and then we can use the money. But how can we benefit from money which somebody else is sad about?
I thought with money, the miyayish right away.
But they're still sad, right? Miyayish and being sad are two separate things, right? They're giving up hope on finding it again.
Yeah.
But, they're still upset about it. So, and he's teaching them a very important lesson of sensitivity to others. I mean, their halacha says it's okay, and it's okay. I mean, we'll use it. But you have to be sensitive to other people's feelings. And when you're using an item which someone, how can you personally enjoy using an item that somebody else is distressed over? How can you enjoy that? How can we use that item? So that was Rav Pam's point. I think that's the point that's being made on this mitzvah as well. The Leviim are on a higher level than the regular everyday Jew. And they're expected to act in that way. So if they are able to obtain property, which is totally permissible to use, but yet that property is being mourned over by someone who lost it. That property is, someone is distraught over the loss of that property. That property was obtained through battle, and people are sad over that battle, then they shouldn't use it. It's not befitting that those who serve Hashem in such an intimate way should use that property. So that's the lesson of the Sefer HaChinuch. I think for us, it's a very important lesson in general. Because many of us think, okay, money is money is money. We got it, it's okay to use, let's use it. But there is a sensitivity involved as well, which means that money that we get, sometimes even if we can say that it's okay, it's mutter, it's permitted, it doesn't always make it right. And we have to always have that sensitivity. And I'm not telling you yes or no. If money comes your way, you can ask your rabbi what to do, and that's not a halachic decision we're making right now. But it's a sensitivity to have, that just because money has come my way, and I have it, and I can use it, doesn't make it right to use necessarily. It could be that you won't find that God is giving you any success through this money. It could be that you're becoming insensitive to others who are upset about the money. So whether it be money that was obtained in a dishonest way, money that came from a source that's not an honest source, money that came in some way which somebody else was distraught over, that's a sensitivity to have, which we shouldn't necessarily use that money, or at least we should at least think twice before we go ahead and just spend it right away.
Why not use some for tzedakah?
Exactly.
Keep some of it, or give it. I mean, that's say you just find something and you're feeling like guilty, it's not really mine, it's not yours, but
right.
If you give some tzedakah and then keep some, would it be better? Or
I don't know if it's better. I mean, again, it's all you're allowed to use the money. The money is mutter. It's okay to use. It's just a matter of the sensitivity. So if it makes you feel better that, okay, I don't want to take it all for myself, then I don't know if there's necessarily a benefit to giving tzedakah or not from it. But just to think twice, there's somebody out there that is crying over this money, or somebody out there feels cheated because they lost this money. Even if it was permissible, just think twice before we say, I'm taking that money.
If you give tzedakah, somebody's going to benefit from that.
That's true. So then it could be that if you benefit others from it, that helps the situation. Right. Overall, people benefit. That's correct. That's a feeling to have. I mean, you find a big challenge in institutions sometimes. An institution might, really need money. Most Jewish institutions are not, they always need money. And then someone offers money, which is not necessarily the cleanest or most honest money. And it's a big challenge for, whoever it is, the director or the rabbi, whoever's on top of the institution, should we take it or should we not? On the one hand, it's being offered to us, and we can find halachic reason to allow it. On the other hand, the money is tainted. And who says you want to build a Torah institution on tainted money? To build a shul on tainted money, then you're building your entire spiritual life on something which is not so clean, something not so straight. On the other hand, we have to pay the bills. So that's a big challenge many institutions have. And again, I'm not here to decide what to do. I'm just bringing up the sensitivity that we should have.
They make themselves
Nishvissendik. Yeah. Right. So this is this idea of not taking spoils of war. Now the next mitzvah we mention is the mitzvah of the Zrolech Chayim V'Kiva, that the Kohen is given the foreleg, the jaw, and part of the stomach called the ma. So why is he given these particular parts of the animal? So the Eben Ezra says simply, these are the best cuts of meat. So I don't know, I'm not a butcher, I don't know which cuts these are. But he says these are very good cuts of meat, so we want to give the Kohen the finest cuts of the meat, and that's why he gets the Zrolech Chayim V'Kiva. The Gemara finds references to the story of Pinchas through these body parts. Pinchas was a Kohen, or became a Kohen, through his actions. He stood up for the honor of God and killed people who were doing a sin in public. And therefore, the gifts given to the Kohanim, they reflect his deed. So without going into details, the arm, the jaw, and the stomach, the ma, those all have reference to Pinchas' story. That's one point made. Another point made by the Eben Ezra is that these three body parts are appropriate for the Kohanim because it's reward for the sacrifices. When the Kohen gives a sacrifice, he slaughters it with his arm, he makes a bracha, uses his jaw for a bracha, and then you have to check over the animal, the insides, to make sure it's kosher, so that corresponds to the stomach. So the foreleg is like the arm where you slaughter, the jaw is for the bracha, and then the stomach is for the checking. So it really fits the Kohen service in the Beis HaMikdash. Another commentary, the Ralbag, he says that the idea of giving them these three body parts actually is a message for us to understand the value of the tribe of Levi. What do I mean by that? He says we have to understand the tribe of Levi, they are our strength. And we rely upon them because they bring down God's blessing into our world. They bring down sustenance. So therefore, whenever we are able to have sustenance in our world, meaning we have food to eat, and we're able to live and survive, that's due to the spiritual blessings that were brought into this world by the tribe of Levi. So he says, therefore, the jaw is how you chew your food, the stomach is how you digest your food, and he says that the forearm shows you that it's because they are our strength, that's how we get our food. So he says the whole idea is to teach ourselves that the tribe of Levi is our strength that helps us have sustenance in our lives. One more point, the Abarbanel. Abarbanel says that the arm represents action, the jaw represents speech, and the stomach represents thought. We talk about, it's in my gut. I have a gut emotion, a gut feeling, we think, on our insides. So he says that the Kohanim are a tribe which, they allow us to atone for all of our actions, whether it be through speech, whether it be through thought, whether it be through action, anything we've done wrong, they atone for us. Therefore, we give them these three body parts that represent the three parts of a person. So that's different ideas of the three different, the Zerua Lechayam Akiva, the forearm, the jaw, and the ma. Now, the second last mitzvah I mentioned is Truma. Truma is, again, the 2% of all of your crops go to Kohanim. So what's the idea of Truma? And just as an aside, I mentioned before, nowadays there is dispute in the early commentaries, do these mitzvahs apply nowadays? Does one who slaughters a cow in America have to give the Zrolech Amikiva, the forearm and the jaw and the ma, to the Kohen or not? So the custom, I believe, is we do not do this anymore, based on an opinion of the Gemara that says that these don't apply nowadays after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash.
Would we eat it?
Yeah, you're allowed to eat it. There's no prohibition for a Yisrael to eat it. So we could eat it. So we don't give these nowadays, typically. The Truma is given nowadays in Israel. We don't give it to a Kohen. They separate Truma nowadays, and then they will let the Truma rot and destroy it. And the reason for that is because the Kohen has to be tahor, be pure to eat his Truma. And nowadays we assume that everybody is impure, so therefore the Truma cannot be eaten. But you have to separate it, because there's an obligation to separate it. So the fruits in Israel nowadays, Truma is separated, but then it's left to rot, and then it's destroyed. That's what we do with Truma. It's something to be aware of, even in America. We don't have to take Truma off of American produce. However, you do find at times Israeli produce in America, and that would require Truma. So if you don't know how to do it, then consult your rabbi or look at your sitter. It gives you instructions. But if you do walk into Costco or Trader Joe's or Giant and you see there's Israeli produce there, so you'll say, this is great. I want to support Israel, which is beautiful. But just be careful. You must take off proper Truma and Maaser, or else it's not kosher. So in America, in a certain sense, it's easier to have kosher produce than in Israel, which seems backwards. But that's so you have to be careful with that. Periodically, you see emails going around. You know, people say, I spotted Israeli tomatoes over here, or Israeli peppers over there, or Israeli carrots over here. So you have to be aware. The packages always say where they're from. So if you're concerned, look at the package. Costco often has oranges from Israel.
And peppers.
And peppers, too? And peppers. So if you shop at Costco, you should check their oranges and peppers. Yeah. But there's always things. And again, you're allowed to buy them, and you're allowed to use them. Just don't use them until you take off your proper separations. If you decide to do it, then again, consult the rabbi, or you can look at your sitter, typically give you instructions.
If it has reliable hechsher, you're allowed to presume the truma has.
Yes, yeah, if there is a hechsher on it, you presume the truma was taken and you're allowed to eat it. But it's uncommon to find that, at least in Costco, no hechsher on these things, but correct. Dates you can find, right, dates you find that on, correct. Yeah, if there's any reliable hechsher on it, you assume that everything was taken off properly. It's actually, I was fooled once, because the brand of oranges in Costco that are from Israel, the brand's called Mahadrin. In Israel, Mahadrin is a high level of kashrus. So I'm like, wow, they have Mahadrin oranges here at Costco? This is amazing. They're like, wait a minute, it doesn't make any sense. I looked at the package, and it turned out Mahadrin was the company name. Right. But there's no indication there of any sort of hechsher on it. So don't be fooled by the word Mahadrin if it's not actually a hechsher telling you it's Mahadrin.
So I'm a little confused. Okay, so you follow through with Shuma, you do that. Who are you giving it to?
So you wouldn't give it to anybody. You would just leave it aside to rot, basically.
You can't give it to any Gentile?
You can't give it to a Gentile, because no one's allowed to. Only Kohen can benefit from it, and the Kohen's not pure, so he can't benefit from it either. So you're stuck nowadays.
We can wrap it up and throw it out, I thought.
So you could double wrap it,
yeah,
and then throw it away respectfully. You could do that. But it sounds like a waste, but unfortunately nowadays we have no halachic way to use it. So we're just stuck right now. The procedure, you don't take that much off, though. It's not talking about like your huge amounts. It's a small amount, but it does seem like a waste. But nowadays, there's just nobody who's permissible to use it. A Gentile can't have it either. It has to be only a Kohen can have it. No one else is allowed to have it. So we're stuck with it right now. What?
The Tahor.
Yeah, the Kohen who's Tahor can have it. Who's pure. So that's Truma. Now Truma, what's the idea of giving Truma? And again, all of them have the same underlying concept, which is supporting Kohanim and recognizing the importance of Kohanim. The Rambam, though, throws in another point. He says that it's training us to be giving people, meaning we're supposed to give in general, we're supposed to give tzedakah to giving people, and part of being giving is giving to Kohanim. So the Rambam says, beyond just supporting the Kohen, that we're being trained in the midah and the proper trait of being generous. Because whenever I have produce, I must give away some. It's not just tzedakah, but I must give away some to a Kohen. And the more I give, the more generous I become. That's the Rambam says. The Sefer HaChinuch adds in another point. He says that when you take off truma, what you're doing is you're dedicating a portion of your food to Hashem Himself. I mean, the Kohen is Hashem's agent. It's Hashem's representative. So giving to the Kohen, at least on some level, is that I'm dedicating this portion of my produce to Hashem. And he says that it trains us to remember who's the boss. You know, who's the one who provided for us all this food. So beyond just supporting the Kohanim and recognizing that we need the Kohen in our lives to teach us and to do service and to Hashem for us, it's also recognizing Hashem through our produce as well. That's Sefer HaChinuch's point. So it's both the message is not just for the Kohen, it's also for me. I'm becoming more generous, and I'm also becoming more aware of God's presence in my life by giving Truma. Reish Sagez, the first of the shearings, the wool which you give to Kohen, is a similar idea as Truma. It's just very practically, the Kohen has no farm. He needs to have clothing, so you give them wool so they can make clothing. So they're given they're giving lots of gifts. You know, they're giving food, they're giving wool so they can have clothing as well. So these are these five different mitzvos. Now the question is, I mentioned it in short before, but let's expand upon it a little bit more. In modern days, we don't treat Kohanim the same way. You know, in modern days, Kohanim, there's no Beis HaMikdash, there's no service to be done. Everyone's considered impure anyways. Kohanim get respect. They get the first, you know, first aliyah and shul. They do pidgin aben. There's certain things Kohanim. They say Birkas Kohanim. There's certain things they do for us still. But overall, Kohen lives a regular life like the rest of us. And, you know, he's not necessarily on any special spiritual plane. He has to work for a living. He has to farm if he's a farmer. He has to be an accountant. Whatever he does, he has to act like any other person. So what's the way that we apply all these ideas nowadays? So I mentioned before, it's a perspective for us not just towards Kohanim, but towards our Torah scholars and Torah teachers. The Kohen's role is to be the Torah teacher to the Jewish people, and that's Levi's role as well. Nowadays, you have plenty of Torah scholars who are not Kohanim Levi'im, but they're taking on that role. And they're the ones who are dedicating their lives to studying Torah, to teaching Torah, to guiding us spiritually. And this is actually a very interesting point made by the Rambam. I'm going to read you to you a quote from the Rambam. And this is actually a very often quoted Rambam, quoted in different contexts for different reasons, but it's a Rambam that's worthwhile to know. And the Rambam discusses exactly our point. He discusses why is it that the Levium did not merit to have land in Israel. This is at the end of the laws of Shemitah in the Rambam's Mishnah Torah. It's the chapter 13, and it's paragraph 12 and 13. So the Rambam says, why is it that the tribe of Levi did not merit land in Israel? And why did not merit to get spoils of war? Exactly as our question is. He says, because they were distinguished to serve Hashem, to teach His ways to the masses. So that's their distinguished. Therefore, they're separated out from the ways of the mundane world. They don't fight wars like the rest. They don't inherit land like the rest. And they do not benefit through the power of their bodies, the Rambam says, meaning that the way that they're going to sustain themselves is not through the physical, so the spiritual. So they're not going to gain wealth through farming. They gain wealth because they teach Torah, people support them. There they consider the army of Hashem. So rather than being the physical army, they're the army of Hashem, as it says in the bracha given to Levi by Moshe, Baruch Hashem, Chelu Hashem, should bless his troops, which refers to Levi. And Hashem will be sure they're supported, as it says in the Torah, that I am their portion and I am their inheritance. So you want to know who is the inheritance of Hashem? It's Levi. They don't get land, they get Hashem instead. So I'll pause there for a second. If you're a Levite, you have to live life also with a lot of trust in Hashem. Because you know, I'm not getting any land. I have no system in which to make money. I'm relying upon Hashem to be supported. So the Jews are supposed to support me. But the truth is, there's no particular Kohen I must give to. I have to give to a Kohen. If everyone likes Kohen A, and everyone despises Kohen B, so Kohen B is going to be pretty poor. Unfortunately, Kohen A is getting a lot of food, because there's no particular Kohen has to receive it. We just give to a Kohanim. We could all choose to get the same Kohen, and other ones we left out. So Kohenists have a lot of trust in God, that I have no land, I have no job, I don't get spoils of war, I need to be supported. He has to trust God. But yet, we tell him, well, your portion is not physical land, your portion is God, and you're going to live a life of trust in God. So let's pause for a second there. If you go back to last week's Parsha, Vayigash, the very end, so it discusses how Yosef was in control of all of Egypt, and he was giving out food during the famine. And all the people came to him as Yosef, we're starving, what do we do? So Yosef said, okay, now first we're going to take all your animals, and we're going to take your land. Eventually it says that Yosef had all of the people of Egypt become slaves to Pharaoh, except the Kohanim, which I'll get to in a second. And that's how he gave them food. He said, okay, you're going to submit yourself totally to the Egyptian kingdom, and therefore we'll feed you. But then it says, but the Kohanim, the Egyptian priests, they were not sold as slaves. And then it says that even though everyone else gave up their land, the Egyptian priests kept their land. And it says, because this was a rule from Paro, that priests get land. So you put it in contrast for a second. The rule of the Torah is that Kohanim, priests, don't get any land. The rule of Paro was priests, in particular, get land. So I saw a certain Sefer describe this, and it's a very important point. He says that this is actually the Torah's cynical approach to idolaters. Because these idolatrous priests knew that their gods aren't going to help them. So of all people, they said, we need to have land, because if we don't have land, we're in big trouble. Whereas when it comes to the Torah says that our priests don't need any land, because God's going to support them, and that's how they live their lives. So the Torah is drawing that contrast right there. The priests knew good and well, they're not getting any land from their idols, and therefore they had to be given physical land so they could support themselves. So that's that contrast. But the Levium lived a life of bitachon, of trust in God, and that's how they were supported. Now let's read the last part of the Rambam. The Rambam says, "Lo she'li bilva." It's not just the tribe of Levi that gets to have this lofty level. And this is what's important for us to understand. He says, rather, any individual in the world, doesn't even sound like Jews, he says, any person, when you call him Bai Olam, in the world, that dedicates their spirit, and Hevino Mado, and his mind helps him understand, he has to separate from the world, and stand up to serve God, and to know God, and to walk in straight ways, in the way that God desires, and he casts off from himself all worldly and mundane calculations, which people always are pursuing. This person has become holy of holies, and God becomes his portion. and he will merit in this world that which he needs, and certainly the next world. So Rambam says that Shevet Levi, tribe of Levi, they're people that God has designated to be spiritual guides. They are separated out, you know, by mandate of the Torah, and live lives of holiness. But the Rambam says that any individual in the world has that ability. Anyone wants to step aside and say, I am dedicating myself to God with sincerity. I'm going to leave all of my mundane calculations behind and focus my life on pursuing God. So he'll be given what he needs to live. You know, there's a way of trusting in God that God provides for you. You're not going to be a millionaire, but Devar HaMaspik, he says, you'll have enough. Your life will suffice. You'll have what you need. But you know, you'll live a life where you're totally in the spiritual, not in the physical. So the Rambam guarantees to us that anybody can really achieve this level even nowadays. It's a very high, lofty level, which very few have achieved and can achieve. But I think even nowadays you do find people like this. Now you read stories of certain great gedolim, sages, let's say in Israel. Let's say, for instance, Rav Steinman, who just passed away from a couple weeks ago at 104. These people, they had very little income. You don't really understand how they made money at all, and how they ate. They ate very little, and they drank very little, but they had sustenance, they had what they needed. There's many people who are great, and very righteous people, unknown to us. And they have very little in terms of sustenance, of parnassa, but yet they survive with what they need. And we look at these as miracles from God, because people like that, who dedicate their lives to God, to the spiritual, and they cast aside the mundane, they do have this special merit to be supported by God with Devar HaMaspik, with the minimal, but with what they need. And again, there's story after story that you can read of people who seem to have, all they do is, all the whole day is help others, learn Torah, daven. No, they don't have a day job, they don't have a night job, you don't understand how it's all coming in, but somehow they are able to survive. And that's because of this point the Rambam is making, that anybody who decides to separate themselves and distinguish themselves as Kodesh Kadashim, as Holy of Holies, God becomes their portion, God becomes their heritage, and they're given what they need to survive. And then he quotes from Tehillim, from King David, Hashem anas chelki Hashem, you are my portion, ata tomich v'gorali. Now you're the one who supports my lot. So it means that you have to be sincere, though. Someone who says, yeah, I don't want to work, so I'm just going to become one of these guys who relies on God. That's not going to work, right? The Rambam is very, very careful in how he describes it. He says, nadva rucho huso. No, his spirit has uplifted him, has motivated him. And he has distinguished himself from the rest of the world. You can't be a person like this if, every single night you're lying on the couch drinking a soda. It means that you're a spiritual person through and through, and then you have the right to rely upon God to help you. Most of us in our lives, so we have to work and make a living and act within the physical world because we're not on this lofty spiritual level. So, but the Rambam is telling us that the tribe of Levi is a model, and that was by Torah mandate they had to live lives like this. But for us, it is an opportunity for every single human being in the world, if they want to become spiritual people, that they could step into the role of the tribe of Levi. It doesn't mean that they get to have Truma and Meiser, but it means that God will give them the support the same way that God gives support to the tribe of Levi. So that gives us the perspective on all these mitzvahs. All of them are pointing to one thing, which is that the tribe of Levi is a tribe which is set apart from the rest of the Jews. They are needed for us to survive spiritually. They are needed to serve God at all times. They need us to support them, and we need them to support us. And we should have that attitude towards the tribe of Levi in general, and to Kohanim, and also to all Torah scholars and teachers, institutions that are there also to serve us and to guide us and to teach us as well. Okay, we'll stop with that. So again, I'll be away next week, and God willing, we'll meet in 2 weeks.